Thank you for everyone who joined on time. Revetson Schwimmen is going to start off our program today.
So welcome to each one of you for joining. Thank you, Emma, for all your hard work in coordinating. There's a superstar lineup, so I'm not going to take too much time. It's sometimes hard to think about Elul when you're coming off of Tisha B'Av, but I actually said my first Ksiva V'Chasima Tova to somebody. So we know that the season has launched, the time is here, and this is certainly a motivator for us at the Women's Initiative to assure that our Elul programming is in check. I leave you with this very brief idea that there's, again, nothing brilliant, nothing that you don't know, but the fact that we have the opportunity to connect, to pause and take a moment in our lives is a privilege, and both in our calendar, but certainly here as well. So welcome. Thank you again. And thank you, Adina, for being here. And I look forward to listening and hearing and learning together with each of you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Revetson Schwimmen. I am really excited for our program today. I think everybody who programs for the community has that moment as the fast is waning on Tisha B'Av and you're finishing off the last video that you chose to watch and you're starting to nod off a little and you all of a sudden sit up and you say, oh my gosh, we have Elul coming up. It's starting. It's coming. And for so many of us, hopefully if we're ahead of the game, we've started thinking about this already. But if we haven't, now it's prime time. It's jumping right into what is our busiest, one of our busiest times of the year. So for that, I really am excited to introduce our panel for today. We have an incredible lineup of women who approach programming from different perspectives in different communal zones. And I am so excited for us to really get this well-rounded picture of what community programming looks like for Elul and the Yamim Noraim season. Before I introduce our panel, I just want to introduce for one moment what is coming down the pipe from the OU Women's Initiative. There will be much more than just this one program, this one initiative. But one of our primary focuses during the Yamim Noraim season is our Asaras Yamei Tshuva booklet. This year, our booklet has been expanded, and it will now accompany you throughout the Yamim Noraim and Yom Tov season. So you will be able to pick up that booklet or place that booklet in your shul before Rosh Hashanah, and it will last you through the end of Simchas Torah. We are focusing on different elements of the different holidays, specifically through the lens of relationships, relationships within the context of ourselves, Hashem, space, things, material possessions, so many different aspects for each of the different holidays. Much more information will be coming to you, but just to keep your eyes and ears open for information on that, to make sure to order your booklets to be placed in your communities and your shuls. We are really excited to present what will Emirat Hashem be a beautiful, beautiful companion. And we want you to just keep your ears open to order that as soon as you see the information come, because we all know Yantif is coming. And with that, I am excited to introduce our panel. Today we have Revetson Rachel Isaacs joining us from Phoenix, Arizona. We have Revetson Liat Meyerfeld from New York City. And we have Mrs. Andrea Shulman joining us from Baltimore. And they will each introduce more of what they do, what their focus is, who they program for. And I'm excited to turn the floor over to them. This is going to run as a panel. So we have questions that we did prepare. If you have any questions that you would like to ask our panelists, we will address those at the end. So please feel free to write them in the chat or jot them down for yourselves. And when we open up to questions, you can ask them at that point. Okay, so without further ado, I am excited to turn it over to our panel. Rachel, do you want to start us off? Please introduce yourself, where you are, and, or it doesn't need to be where you are right now, but where you typically program and who you program for.
Okay, thank you. And thank you to the OU for doing this program and to the Women's Initiative for doing so many amazing programs that support us. I gained so much from them. So my name is Rachel Isaacs. I've been in Phoenix, Arizona for 15 years. And right now I'm traveling. I'm near Seattle and it's beautiful and it's cold. but for my programming, most of the things I do are for any demographic that's comfortable being associated or affiliated with an Orthodox shul. So whoever wants to come is welcome for either during the week or for Shabbos and Yontif. And I'm going to try to focus more on the things that pertain to shuls specifically, since I'm the Rebbetzin of the shul, and that's how I got into programming.
Okay, amazing. Thank you. Liat, would you like to introduce yourself and who do you program for?
Hi. So my name's Liat Meyerfeld. Where I'm from is complicated. I grew up in Israel, actually, but I also lived in London, England for 20 years, where I directed programming, women's programming for Aish UK. I currently live in New York City for the last few years, where my husband and I run an outreach organization for young professionals in the city. So my primary demographic is young professionals, mostly from non-observant backgrounds, but they come from all different places and all different types. And I also assist with programming for shuls and young people also around the country.
Okay. And I know you correct us, Andrea or Andrea?
Andrea.
Okay, I was right the first time. Okay. Andrea, would you like to introduce yourself and who you program for?
First of all, before I introduce myself, thank you to Emma for inviting me, and thank you to the two Adinas, the powerhouses. I'm just laughing because I got an out of office message from Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman this week, and I was like, no, she'll still be on the call. There's no such thing as out of office. So thank you for making sure I was right about that. And thank you for all your wonderful groundbreaking work that you continue to do for us.
How much money did you have on it?
I knew I'd be right, so not a lot. So I'm Andrea Shulman. I'm the executive director of Misora Baltimore, which is located obviously here in Baltimore. I have been in this role for, I think, over 20 years at this point. We had recently rebranded. We were formerly known as WIT, Women's Institute of Torah. We run classes in Shiurim for the women throughout the Baltimore community. We have participants that range from 18 to 85, although I always say we go older than 85. But the average age typically begins over 40, many retired women who are no longer working. And we're also a destination where a lot of people who are new to town come to meet like-minded women. They move here, whether it's because their kids live here or they've retired here. And it's a great place for them to come to meet women who have the same goals as them.
Okay, that's amazing. I think it's so important to have that women's space in the community where people can turn and say, it's not the carpool in for my kids' school. It's somewhere I can meet someone and talk to them about the shiur we both just sat through. So really incredible. Thank you all for making the time to be here. From what I'm sure we can all tell, our extremely busy schedules with a lot going on. So thank you for making the time to be here. And with that, we're going to jump in. So you each come from different perspectives, have some overlap in the women and the community members that you address. But when it comes to Elul, there's a lot of things to think about. So the first question that I'm going to ask is, what are the factors that you think about specifically when it comes to Elul and the Yamim Noraim programming? For example, are you thinking of specific themes? Are you focusing on certain timing factors? Other additional aspects that play into the programs that you're going to try to create? Where's that jumping off point? Where's that initial concern, that initial place of focus for you when it comes to this time of year? So for that, we're going to start with Liat. Liat, we're not hearing you.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So firstly, on a technical note, I think, so we have a very transient community. And I think that that's often true with Yamim Noraim. So specifically with Elul programming, we need to take into consideration like where people are going, when they're leaving, and what tools we can give them for wherever they may be. And what I think also with Yamim Noraim themselves is, again, to know that people are traveling. They've been other places. So some have had Elul programming, some of them haven't. And to and to plan accordingly. But I think specifically for Yom Noraim is one of the important concepts is to respect our students. On the one hand, you know, we assume that they come with knowledge, but maybe they don't actually, and we need to find that balance. So I guess really what I want to say is to know that wherever a person comes from with their Jewish knowledge, and this is true even for, I think, people who've been to, you know, to yeshiva and seminary, if years have gone by, they don't necessarily remember everything that they've learned. But wherever they come from, they also come with their intelligence and their general knowledge with their own life experiences and understandings. And many of them are experts in their field. And suddenly they come, I would say, like young children in a big children's school where it seems like everybody knows what they're doing except them. Everyone else knows how to read, when to stand, when to bow, how long it's going to be. And again, even if we've learned it in school, like the three parts of davening of Rosh Hashanah, we don't always remember. We don't always seem to know what's flying. So we want to explain things in a way and teach in a way that, you know, will make everything be less intimidating, but to very much respect their intelligence and to make it relatable for who people are and where they're coming from. And in terms of that, I think certainly nowadays is that all the themes really need to take current events into consideration and not to be blind and deaf to what's happening around us. Like Yom Noraim are not going to happen in a vacuum. They happen within the context of everything else in life. And we can't always plan it in advance, but to be very aware of other things that are happening.
I think that's so vital. Like if someone comes to you and they're a resident in radiology and they feel like an expert, and then you come to them and you're talking to them on such a basic level, it's just not going to speak to them. That to keep that in mind, I think is so important. Andrea, what are you thinking about? What are your initial considerations and factors when planning your LLM and Yom Noraim program?
So especially this time of year, whether or not a woman works outside of the home or not, this is a busy time of year. You know, every year you take a look at the calendar. If you're like me, you start looking at Pesach time, looking at what Yontif looks like, and you say, oh, there's a Shabbos in between, you know, and you freak out about how much there is to do. So with that in mind, the programming has to be relevant. It has to be something somebody is willing to come and say, this is worth my hour. This is worth me leaving the house. This is worth me coming. And it has to be stuff I find for women. To do classes on things that are not relevant to women just doesn't make sense. You know, if you're going to focus on the part of davening, focus on a part of davening that you know the majority of women are in shul for. I made a note here, like, I'm not going to have a shiur for our ladies on slichos. It's great if your shul has a lot of women that show up for that, then great, go for it, do that class. But for our audience, I don't think that works, whether it's, you know, instead you focus on things like shofar and musaf and laning. And to piggyback on what Liat said, which was, I think, great, you know, people may have had a yeshiva education and may have learned things. And we say aleinu three times a day, but like, last year, we did a real in-depth program about Aleinu because it's such a focus of the Yontif davening, and it just gave women a new perspective. So I think that, you know, taking in timing and people's schedules into effect, and as it gets closer to when Yontif happens, perhaps a Zoom option is better because people aren't going to leave their house if they can be cooking and Zooming and learning at the same time.
I have one question on that. When you say a Zoom option, I think that's a smart idea, but how do you navigate? Do you offer Zoom and in person? Do you feel like there's
one or the other, because either you want bodies in a room or you want people on Zoom. The hybrid model just does not work. It's like, in my experience, we've been doing this since what, 2020. And you know, I think that especially if you're trying to get a broader reach, Zoom has a broad reach. And if people are home, people travel, especially in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, if you want to do something, or even this year, there's not a lot of days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but doing some sort of Zoom option then makes sense. But it would be a Zoom only program, which we've done many. Again, later I can share my screen and show people examples. But it one or the other is definitely the way to go.
Right. Okay. Really important. I like that. You have to make it worth their hour. That Time's tight. That's really important to keep in mind. And Rachel, where are you starting from? What's your jumping off point, your initial considerations?
Okay, so definitely covering everything that was already covered. Those were all in my notes. But to me, more from a family perspective, I see ELL really as a tremendous gift, and it sets the tone for the whole year. So it's like a kickoff. People are coming back from traveling during the summer, from getting settled into school. And I see it as like the launch for the year. So whatever mission or whatever goal that we have for that year, whoever is listening to this is planning. So you have something in mind that you want to give over. It could just be the classical going around the year type things. But if you have some specific theme, this is a great, great time to launch it. And there's so much under the topic of ELL, the topic of coming back, of rebooting, starting again, and all just the classical ELL themes, that there's like nothing that you want to do that has to do with Torah, mitzvah, shul, spirituality that doesn't fit into ELL. So I would say that whatever your mission is, like, you can make a great kickoff event now before the Yom Ha'aretz, going into it to set the tone for the whole year. And I agree that it's a really busy, hectic time for women. So keeping that in mind is very important. Like, we want people to feel enriched when they come to our programs. We don't want them to feel like drained and, oh yeah, I have to go to another thing. Like, yay, I get to go to another thing. And our programs really help set that tone to make it meaningful for everybody that's coming. So I'm like really practical, and my best friend is the calendar. So I also like look at the dates and see like, does this make sense? And some years, like, we'll look at the calendar and say like, this just doesn't make sense. Like, it's sad, it's disappointing, but we can't fit everything in depending on how things come out. And you just sometimes have to walk away from a program and say like, this isn't going to work this year. And you're not doing anyone a favor or yourself a favor trying to make things happen that don't work. So having that clarity is important going in. And then you can take whatever you say, oh, I can't do this ELL, but I can do it another time. So just using that calendar, like just keeping it near you and always looking at it and going back and saying like, when does this make sense? So the demographics, there's, some people are doing programming for very specific demographics, but just keeping in mind all the sensitivities when you plan something, like, people have a lot of expenses. So making things accessible, making people feel comfortable that they can come. If you're focusing on families, a lot of times the seniors can help out and be a part of it. They don't have to look at it and say, no, I can't come. So just pulling everybody in, everybody has something to offer. And I love the classical ELL themes. There's so many great topics. It's a time for like tshuva, forgiveness, and also, keeping in time with the times and keeping things relevant. So like, if breath work is popular now, so you do a meditation before a tefillah event, but like going through, where people are at in the world and what they're up to, like if they're upset and, a rage room speaks to them. So you do a class on anger and getting over that and how to walk into Rosh Hashanah calm. And just another note on the practical aspect of it, like for the tefillah, like we are spending so many hours in shul if we're able to go to shul. So really going through and again, just like, piggybacking off of what everyone else said, like, yes, we're dealing with educated people. We're dealing with people that really know, and Rosh Hashanah is, they're adults. They've been coming for so many years, but there's so much to learn. There's no such thing as like, we hit a dead end. There's so many different opportunities. So, one of the things I was thinking of doing is just dividing up the maksar. Some people do this for the Haggadah at their Pesach Seder, just going around and saying, oh, there's a Shabbos before we could get together and everyone could present something that they feel that they want to offer on the maksar and, or having to do with the Yom Ha'aretz that they want to share. So getting people out is super rough at that time of year. So making the times that they're already coming meaningful is a great way to tap into it. So like if somebody, you know, if we have that Shabbos, we could do a woman Shal Shittus and people could share their thoughts. And having that Seres Mechuva to kind of break between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and say like, oh, how's it going? And where do we want to redirect before Yom Kippur also is a great opportunity. One last thing about the calendar is that Labor Day is fabulous for kids events. So if you take that Monday morning, a lot of people aren't doing things and aren't pre-scheduled because it's a Monday. So it's not like their normal Sunday routine. And using that to tap into could be a great opportunity.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. I think that's important to note about the times that people are already out enriching them. So I know that's something we've thought about on our end in our community is like, what do you do with Kiddush? Like, are there times of the year where you say like, we're going to have a chabura on the side during Kiddush if some, like when people are already out, like you don't need to get them out again. If there's something you can do during that time, then that can be really productive. Okay. Now we're getting into the meat and potatoes, the programs that you've run that are tried and true, that have been successful. Please share one or two successful programs that you've run that relate to this time period. What was the program and what made it successful? For this, we're going to start with Andrea.
Okay, so we do, I would say, three or four different versions of things during this time of year. We do classes in the shiurim, individual shiurim, basically during the daytime for women. You know, last year, I think we had one even on apples and honey, and he gave a whole halachic discussion about it. Actually, we've had a bunch of, you know, when again, different themes and different classes that are very applicable to women. We do one large communal class on a Sunday morning. Last year it was Slavi Young Rice Wolf. This year will be Rabbanit Amit Yagubi, who will be coming, and that is for the women of the community, and that obviously draws a larger crowd. Also, Sunday mornings are different than a weekday morning. And then we've talked about Zoom. So two different Zoom things we've done. One is something that we piggybacked after COVID, which we began doing these virtual tours with Ruchama Alter, who was a tour guide in Israel. She doesn't go on the scene. What she does is she uses pictures and sources. And we did it, I think, 3 years ago. We did one for Tzom Gedalia, and she did an in-depth tour of Nebi Samuel and spoke about Gedalia. And we really learned about Tzom Gedalia on Tzom Gedalia, which was really nice for the women. This year, we're doing something before Yom Kippur on Zoom. Previously, we've done Sukkot. And again, we do Zoom for those because it's at the point of no return when women are just not going to come out any longer is basically what it is.
Okay, amazing. And do you find that there's a certain demographic who joins the the Zoom tours or have you found that it's able to reach different types?
It's all different ages and people that come. The funniest part is we're a women's organization. All of our stuff is for women. And there are Rabbanim in this community who have come over to me and told me they were sitting next to their wife watching our Zoom tours during COVID because they loved it. They asked permission. The Rebbetzin asked permission if, you know, her husband could watch with her and I spoke to the speaker and it was fine. But it was just very funny when, like, you know, somebody will come over. So it's definitely... everything is well received. It's just a matter of the time has to work for each person, which is why we try to do, you know, something in the morning. We try the evenings, I will tell you, and this again goes into your next question. So, but evenings are just so hard because everything is a back to school night in September and there's just no competing anymore really with that.
Right. You're either at a back to school night, I don't know. There's so many weddings, Baruch Hashem. I feel like there's something every night. September and June are the really hard ones. Okay. Liat, what are two successful programs that you've run relating to this time of year?
One of them we've done, which I think is specifically really for an outreach community, but I want to share, and I'm trying to think like how it could be also changed a little bit for people who are observant, is that we've done on Rosh Hashanah, We've done like a chauffeur lunch break experience for people who are not, well, for us, it's people who are at work, right? And so they haven't even taken the day off for Rosh Hashanah, but they want to do something that's Rosh Hashanah. So we do where they're taking off their lunch break anyway, then we serve lunch and apples and honey and with a discussion kind of half sheer kind of thing while they're eating. And then maybe Shema and Avinu Malkeinu and a shofar blowing. So they're Yotzei shofar, even though they haven't done anything else. And I wonder if maybe shuls could, obviously, if you're a very firm shul, then that's not going to be. But if you have people who are coming just for part of the day, then to have something that's kind of, you know, all has like a little bit of everything very quickly is a way for them to have that experience if they're not taking the whole day to be in shul. But something that we've done either during Elul or Aseret Yimei Tshuva that's gone tremendously, and we've done it in person and in Zoom, is a mock court it's a kind of a cheshbon nefesh kind of thing. It's the people versus me. And the accused is on trial for failure to live up to my potential this past year. And so we have a judge, that's your inner conscious. We have the prosecuting attorney, which is the voice of accountability. The defense attorney is the voice of compassion. And the witnesses are different parts of our subconscious. So someone comes and, you know, gives the excuse of laziness. Someone comes, gives fear of failure, perfectionism, maybe. But then the defense comes with the achievements, with resilience, with growth. And we have different people play each part. And then we have everybody together as the jury really discussing, you know, this idea of cheshbon nefesh. And hopefully we also end very much with, you know, this idea that we don't seek perfection, but responsibility, that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is about taking responsibility and that the book is still being written. And so it gives people really this, maybe a different angle or just a funner way of looking at this idea of cheshbon nefesh and what are the reasons that we give for our behavior, how much of it is excuses, how much of it is real, and also a recognition of what we have accomplished so that we end with empowerment and go into Yom Kippur with this feeling of empowerment, not guilt.
That's so cool. I like to really play it out in front of people's eyes. I happen to think the lunch break idea, something that we always get I think that's, first of all, amazing to be able to work with that population that, like, you could sort of just say, like, okay, they're not even taking off for Rosh Hashanah. Like, what are we going to do? But to use that lunch break, I feel like it could honestly be used for, like, the preteen age, like the not yet bar bat mitzvah, but, like, it's a long time for them to sit in shul when they're 10 years old to sort of do, they can sit for what they can, but then have something that's, like, self-contained like that, like, do a discussion, lunch, like something for that age, I feel like maybe could work in a shul. Like that could be cool. And Rachel, what are one or two programs you've run during this time of year?
Okay, so I'm going to focus on the shul. When people come to shul, we want them to be able to daven in a comfortable setting with as limited distractions as possible. So, for the most part, the adults are in a good space and we don't have to focus on them, but we need to entertain the kids. If we provide programming for the children, then the mothers have the option to come and everybody benefits from it if kids are not running in and out of shul and everybody has the focus. So we have two programs that we do. One of them, I'm going to tell you, we called it Upgrading Davening. So that one you can run the whole year. We've run it like just for short sessions, also like between Pesach and Shavuos. If you come this many, if you clock this many minutes, then you get a reward at the end. So basically all the kids register and they earn incentives for the time spent in shul. And there's also like a checklist. Like I heard 30 sounds of the shofar. I heard 100 sounds of the shofar. So after Rosh Hashanah, they go on, there's a Google form and they could fill it out and see. So if you're running it throughout the year, you could really have fun with the different challenges. And you could also extend it into Kiddush, like I say Good Shabbos to a doctor. I say Good Shabbos to somebody that was born in another country. And it really makes it very interactive. So we did this program like on and off for different years. And now, you know, when you stay long enough, you get to see the success of the program. So years later, people are coming back now and saying, like, I know how to daven because I did that program so many years ago. That's, you know, and there's a lot of girls that want to come and their mothers aren't able to come because they have younger siblings at home. So they come in, and then, you know, we have an amazing, warm, friendly shul where everybody is happy to sit next to somebody whose mother's not there and help them along. And the kids really benefit. And I think it's nice all around. And they're too old to go to a children's program, and it's not really appropriate for them. So it gives them an incentive to come, and they could sit next to either someone that helps them or their friends. And after a very short amount of time, like, they get into it on their own. So that's one great program. And on Rosh Hashanah itself, we have from the start, from the very beginning of shul, when shul starts, till the end, there's programming, and kids come in and they don't know to bring breakfast, lunch, water. They're just like there in shul. So over the years, we've developed a program where they have a packed schedule, and they come in and they'll do hands-on activities, more like low-key style things. Like, they could bake challah, they can make a honey cake. We give them breakfast. We make kiddush right when they come. So the counselors can also, everybody who's there can eat. They do a simanim party, and then a lot more kids come to hear the shofar, and then their families join for musaf. So then we'll bring in outside entertainment. We have this great, I don't know if it's in other communities, but this guy who comes in and he basically trains the kids to run a circus. So they're doing something amazing. They're learning skills and they're challenging themselves, and they feel good. Like, they really work hard at it. And then at the end, we'll serve them lunch and do like tashlich style things towards the end. Like, they can make a fishbowl out of candy. And when they go back to their parents, like, they're smiling, they're happy, they had a great time with friends. The parents have like hopefully had a meaningful davening, and it's just such a nice way for the parents to know that their kids are taken care of. And for the kids to gain a lot and challenge themselves in different ways without being bored, without running in and out. So I think just giving that complete experience to the children, both for the older and the younger, really helps out everybody. And it helps the shul have the decorum that we need in order to be able to focus on our davening.
That's incredible. Definitely, I marked down some ideas. We're definitely trying to think of how to keep those kids engaged, because my kids are the top runners, the in and outers. So we gotta keep them engaged. And I do see we have some questions about these programs specifically coming in the chat. We're going to save them for the end, but we will know that these are addressed to Rachel. I did mark that down for anyone who asked those questions now. So all these programs sound really, really incredible, but we all know that there are challenges that come up with programming at this time of the year. And I think that we've touched on some of them so far, but are there any specific challenges that you think we have not yet mentioned that can come up with programming at this time of year, whether it's a population that can typically feel unincluded at this time of year, whether it's, and again, I know we've touched on some of them, but is there one that stands out to you that maybe you've created a specific program to address, or that you've been mindful of certain elements of a program? Would love to hear those thoughts. So we're going to start with Liat.
So I think the first thing is in terms of, you're saying in terms of challenges?
Yeah.
So I think first of all is that we have to always really be focused on our community, and not, I think often we think that what inspires us will inspire them. And of course, Dvarim Hayotzi Min HaLev, you know, we need it to be something that we're inspired by, but to really focus and think about them. You know, Rosh Hashanah, it comes once, right? Once a year. We have this one shot to really give them what will impact them. So, but also on the other hand, when we think, oh, we have this one shot with them, is I think sometimes we also over-program. and that Elul and all the Yom Noraim, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. And then we just, we sometimes, I think, throw too much at people and they're just like, I just can't come anymore. And I think it was mentioned before, but to really pace the programming so that it works for people. And I think my real tip though is that as many people as we get involved in the pre-programming, also really helps the programs run smoothly, even if we don't really need their help, is that if people are there to, like, you know, throw the ideas out together or work them through together, plan them together, I feel like when we get them on board, then it all runs much more smoothly. And last I want to say is that, and also then people have personal ownership, which is really what we want from Yomim Noraim, is we want it to be their own. And I guess the last thing is really to, you know, to think about how we want people to leave Rosh Hashanah, and what are the feelings that we want them to walk away with, and to make sure that, that our programming really, that the messaging flows, in order to, for our goals to be achieved.
Okay. Thank you. Andrea, what are potential challenges that we should specifically keep in mind? Are there specific programs to address them? How do you address them?
So I'm a logistics person. So in my mind, any challenge for us typically are logistical challenges, whether, you know, we talked about before, community conflicts, things, you know, and Rachel spoke about a calendar, like you have to live and breathe by whether it's your community calendar, your shul calendar, you have to look at all the different factors when planning things, because to plan something when there's three other things going on the same evening, it's just setting yourself up for failure, unfortunately. So I think those are, you know, that's a big challenge. You know, for example, like I said, we run a big Sunday morning pre-Rosh Hashanah program. I used to always insist that be at 10 o'clock. It is in the main shul in the building that we use. And then you realize it's Elul. They, you know, say L'davar Hashem Ori at the end. They blow shofar at the end. And the 9 o'clock minyan does not get out so fast. So, you know, we've started making that program begin at 10:30, because I always say, if you're at that 9 o'clock Sunday morning minyan, you're not running anywhere. And those men take their time to get out, and then we need to bring the women in. So just logistical things like that. If you're doing something in the evening, what time is Mincha Maariv? You want to make sure you have the space you need. You want to make sure there's parking. All of that kind of stuff. And I think it's interesting that you began by saying, you know, once Tisha B'Av's over, then you start and, you know, thinking about Elul. So for me, in my head, when you do planning, once Tisha B'Av's over, people leave town, right? So especially a lot of community Rabbanim who have been very busy all summer and then have, you know, to start planning for the Yom Noraim, which is a very big job on their part. So you want to be able to reach the people that you need to reach as well. So just making sure that when you're planning, that you know that you need to keep that in mind, the scheduling of whether it's your speakers and your presenters, and just making sure that everything works, not only for your participants, but for your presenters as well.
Okay. And Rachel, specific challenges that we address, that you have to address through your programs?
So obviously all the logistics, they definitely are huge. Getting people out at a busy time is rough. But I find the expectations that there's like this expectation that we're going into Yom Noraim, we're just going to feel it. Like, we're going to get it. It's Elul, like Rosh Chodesh Elul, and it starts. And I think that it doesn't work for everybody. We have very physical jobs as females. We're shopping, we're cooking, so just doing all these things and to help us connect. We shouldn't feel like, oh, we're doing physical things. Like, we're doing physical things in order to do those things. And really, I mean, I think just a big part of the way we do things is keeping those expectations in mind, as that shopping, that cooking, that dish that we're making, that is what is making Rosh Hashanah for our kids or our community. Like those challah rolls that we're, you know, putting cinnamon sticks in, or we're rolling cinnamon, that is how we're doing things. So in terms of like that guilt of like, we may not we may not feel, you know, Hashem's in the field, he's waiting for us, but we are, we're doing it. We're just doing it in a different way. So really just keeping in mind the mindset as we go through Elul and the Yom HaMenorah, that what we're doing is the right thing. And even if we're spending all day in the kitchen, that is a good thing, partially. And yes, of course, you know, we're preparing and we should do everything else, but the time and the energy that goes into this season is important. Our attitude that we're doing it is important, and being able to relay that to that excitement to everybody around us is really crucial to the success of the season.
Amazing. And then we're just going to jump off of that in terms of, I think you've all put in the very practical pieces all along. Like Andrea just said, if you want to run a 10 o'clock program, there can't be another program in that room until 9:59. But are there any logistical pieces, any tips for implementation that you feel like we haven't touched on yet that are really important? Making these programs happen. Any quick thoughts on what's one thing like that? Plan your timing accordingly. Any implementation thoughts that you think we have to include? Rachel?
So for me, it's the target audience. Like, you're never going to please everyone. You're never going to be able to accommodate everyone. So really try to think when you're doing a program, who's your target audience, and communicate directly with them. And for them, think about the logistics that make a difference. Like, if you're targeting seniors, like, don't do a program at night when they can't drive. Or a lot of them prefer to not start their day at the crack of dawn. So finding that time, now everybody working can't come midday, but your target is, you know, let's say the senior population for this event. So knowing who your target is, for anything that you do really helps you, get the main focus, and hopefully other people will come, and a certain demographic will always come, but you'll always get people that can't. So just when you go into a program, knowing exactly what you want to get out of the program and what you want to target, I find to be really helpful.
Amazing. I think that's so important. Like, when we all say, like, you want to reach the, I don't know, like, young moms, and you ask how you promoted it, and the answer is you only put it in the Shul bulletin. You can probably count on one hand how many young moms have read the Shul bulletin. So it's important to always keep those things in mind. Liat, any lessons for implementation, specific things to keep in mind?
Add that I found is really helpful is to have something for people to take home with them. Whether it's if we've done it not on Yom Tov, then, you know, if you've taken the time, I don't know, write a letter to your future self, take home a stack of sticky notes to write your, you know, quick notes that you want to put in your machzer, whatever it is. But if they have something tangible to take home with them, or whether it's the OU booklet that, you know, they can also, that people can also take home, and then it's easier for them to kind of, the messages stay with them longer when there's something tangible.
Okay. And Andrea, practical tip to take with us?
Yeah, mine is just to be prepared. When you're running an event, don't come in like a chicken without a head. Be prepared. Have everything that you need to run that event ready, whether it's, you know, you need a screen, you need a microphone, you need the room, you need the parking lot. You know, security is now a big deal, you know, to make sure you have all the proper things set up that you need, and it'll just help your event run smoother. And the other thing, just to piggyback on what Rachel said, which I thought was great about expectations, you know, I've had people come over to me at an event which is pretty crowded and say, oh, I thought there'd be more cars in the parking lot. You know, that's not helpful. You just have to really know that you're making the people happy that are there and doing the best for the people that are in that room at the time, and not to get yourself caught up in the little, you know, details of somebody saying something like that to you. So just to, you know, be prepared both logistically for what you need and also for yourself to know that you're there and you're running the best possible program you can run at that time.
I always love it when people say that. It's like, so why didn't you bring your friends if you wanted to see more cars in the parking lot? Okay. And lastly, as you, Emirat Hashem, in 2 months are going to wind down into Cheshvan, how are you going to evaluate what you did, the programming that you ran, in terms of, was it successful? how are you going to judge that? Is it the number of the cars in the parking lot? Is the number of people who text you saying they had a great time? How do you measure that success? Andrea, let's start with you.
So I have, you know, a few different ways. So with our classes, I can tell within 5 seconds of it ending if it went over well just by the reaction of the women when they leave. It is obvious to me, and it could be, again, I have years of experience and I know these ladies well and I could read them, but it is very, when they like somebody, they are very effusive about it and they tell us. So that's a great way. We also get email messages from people, which just a tip, I find it's very useful and nice to then forward those to your presenter or your speaker. It makes them feel good about what they just did. And it also helps keep you engaged, just another touch point in case you want to use them again in the future. And then we do a combination of email surveys. And then just for our summer program, we decided, you know what, we're going to put out comment cards on the last day and let people hand write them, because some people don't like doing a web survey. They wanted to give more information. So I feel like just taking all the different pieces. And I also feel like when somebody doesn't like something, they make sure to tell you as well. So, you know, hopefully all those different things can combine and then help you sort of do a, you know, I don't want to say like a post-mortem, but after the event, you can go through and while it's fresh in your mind, make some notes as to what worked and what didn't work and what you would like to see again.
Okay, amazing. Rachel, how do you know if you've been successful?
So knowing the goal makes that much easier. So if you know before you're planning an event, like, am I doing this event just to check this box? Because we have to offer this as a shul. So just, you know, you check that box, you're successful just because you were able to offer that. Like a shul has to have a parsha class. Like we have a parsha class. Hopefully, you know, it grows and people want to come to it. But just sometimes having those options available to have that, like, robust programming is important. So it's successful just by saying, oh, we have a presenter and we're doing it. But let's say if I'm doing a program for the shul to be, for the kids to be engaged for Rosh Hashanah davening, so then was the shul quiet? At the end of davening, I like think back, were there doors banging? Are there kids in and out? Was there a demographic that wasn't engaged in our programming? And how are we going to tweak that next year to know that, oh, you know what, the three-year-olds weren't interested in the circus. So what are we going to do for them? Like maybe we need a tumbling class or something. So just, again, the goal and taking that goal and flipping on the other end. Did we meet that goal for this program?
Okay. The beginning with the end in mind and then evaluating based on that. Leah, how do you know if your programming was successful?
So, you know, like it's already been said, I think definitely not by the number of people that came. I'm almost always disappointed because I always think, wow, this is going to be an amazing program. And then it's not always as well attended as we think. I think it has to be by the feedback of the people that were there. But I want to share a quick story. We had a program where a convert shared her story. And you know, I thought people would be interested to hear from someone who had opted in. And actually very few people came. So I asked a close student of mine who didn't come, why not, Sophia? And so Sophia answered me one of the most poignant, thoughtful things that I've kept that in mind since then. She said, I don't need to hear a convert. She said, I've also opted in. She said, my brother's dating out. Most of my college friends aren't connected. And I choose to have Friday night dinners. I choose to meet with you. I choose to go to, you know, classes and social events. She says, I too had a choice and opted in. And I think that we always have to remember that those who came, wherever they are on the spectrum, everybody's busy. They have a lot of other things happening. You know, if they've used our programs to opt in. And that's huge. So we always have to go by the success of the people that did come.
Okay, so important to keep in mind that it's about the people, not the number, not the cars, the people. Okay, thank you so much to our presenters. We're now going to turn to open questions. We're going to start with the questions that are in the chat. But if you have further questions, then feel free to unmute after that. And we'll address them in the rest of the time. Okay, so let's see. We have in the chat, I think both of these questions were, I thought there were two. Let's see. Okay. Who runs the Rosh Hashanah program for the kids in the shul? So I think this was specifically to Rachel. Are you specifically for that? Do you have a youth couple that works the whole year that also does this? How does that work?
I wish. How do we get one? So that's, you know, we have a woman who is incredible. She's a teacher in the community and she's been with us for many years. So she oversees it, but she can't, she doesn't do the planning and she obviously can't do it herself. So she's our children's program, you know, per diem style person the whole year. And then we hire in addition. So during the year, it doesn't seem to work out. Sherut Lumi is not allowed to work on Shabbos according to their contract. So we hire non-Jews. We have a babysitting service, kind of like Uber for babysitters. So like, we know if somebody cancels, somebody else will show up. If they like Friday night, like we're not online. So we don't know if somebody can't come, but it automatically goes back into the app and then the next person shows up. So it works so far. Like we did it the whole year and it worked well. We always have somebody that comes to help back her up. And yeah, it's by us, it's called Busy Bees. I'm sure there's something similar in most large communities. Anywhere there's a college, there's probably babysitters. It's a little bit of a missed opportunity. Like I like for security, I like having, non-Jews on, they have their phones, they're able to make the calls. But it's a missed opportunity because they're not able to enrich and each group of new babysitters that come have to be trained about what they can do, can't do. So that's why, this woman that we have is incredible to have that stability. And she is really responsible for the safety. And then any programming we do has to be like, you know, either through me or through anyone else in the community that steps forward and says, how can I help you? So for Rosh Hashanah, we're very lucky. We have an amazing team that comes forward every year and helps out planning the scavenger hunt and like being hands-on. And some of the older girls, like they need a break and they're happy to go out and run. I'm going to do the challah baking or I'm going to do the apple stick pop, you know, activity. So it breaks up. But if anyone knows a couple that wants to come help us, we'd love to have them.
Yes, then the next largest crisis is the lack of youth directors in the pro world.
I wanted to add a little bit of what you said at the end, Rachel, is that for a lot of the teens, davening is much too long. And that's not just the girls who maybe we think of as the natural babysitters. It's true for the boys as well. Not all of them can sit through a long davening. And if we give them, you know, half hour or hour slots to go out to help with the youth service, then it also can, you know, they can each also take part and help a lot. We found that worked well also.
I know many adults that can't sit through such a long davening either.
Well, that also happens. I think sometimes you do find, especially in a shul, that there are parents who are happy to also volunteer to be out for part of it and help with certain elements of the program.
Right. So
I agree. It's nice to have someone who's in charge of the whole thing, but certainly certain elements can be done by I guess adults and youth of the community.
Especially lunchtime. Everybody's ready for some pizza lunch, you know?
Definitely. Okay. Are there any other questions you can feel free to unmute to ask? Or put it in the chat, whichever is more comfortable. Okay. Has anyone done a hashkama shorter minion for the teens who then work in the youth space?
I've seen this during the year. I'm just wondering if anyone's thought about doing that on Yamim Noraim, because Rachel, even in the big cities, we also don't have, the group leaders don't work on Rosh Hashanah because they need to be in shul.
Yeah, my husband does that. The shul has an early minion. It used to be very clandestine and nobody was supposed to know because it was just for shul staff. Anyone who was working, whatever working meant, was part of this minion. But there were a lot of people who actually, a lot. There were definitely people who wanted to be in a hashkama space. You have the regular hashkama goers, you have people who want to really, who's, you know, they're going to tag team with their wives. It gives them an opportunity to get to shul. So that early, actually in Lormarian, it's a vasikin minyan. It's not even hashkama. It's vasikin, and there is a hashkama that's regularly scheduled, but it is a vasikin minyan. And they go very fast. Not my, you know, for some people, they love that. Not my cup of tea, but...
I also wonder if you could do for these, you know, stagger it, like, you know, you do shacharis and then they have a break and then they stagger musaf minyanim, the teens. Again, you need a critical mass.
I know in Pittsburgh, I know 2 years ago, a critical mass of moms actually went to the Hashgama Vasika Minyan, and then we ran the groups. We had already heard shofar. We already did our davening. I mean, I think a lot of moms next year did not work as well because people do love the singing of Rosh Hashanah. Like that's like what people love. We couldn't get that critical mass, but I think it is something to think about, like having some sort of staggered minion so you can daven and work around the childcare needs.
We did it during COVID, and it was amazing. Like I went to it during COVID and then I was available to oversee the more spaced out programming. It was great. Like for me personally, I was able to focus on my davening without any concerns at all. It also helps a lot if you have a security team, because now you have all these adults that aren't davening and they're outside, and walking around. So if you are able to do it, it is great, but, Zechana, that having that being together, it does definitely detract. Like I had daven before, so like the representative of the shul wasn't in shul for Rosh Hashanah davening. Like I don't think it was ideal. Right. It was COVID, so nothing was ideal, but you know, there's definitely pros and cons of doing it, but it definitely makes it accessible for the people that have to be on during those hours to be able to be fully present in two spaces.
Right, definitely. I think there's a lot of ways to break it or space it that it's possible for people to tag team, be in different places, do different elements. Roanna pointed out in the chat that sometimes the problem with bringing the teens to the hashkama is that they don't want to wake up that early. So definitely pros and cons both ways. Are there any last questions? We have time for one more quick question. Okay, I want to close with we have one last question. Guess mine will have to wait for another time. I guess my question is, how do you segment your population to cover everybody? Oh, for just finishing off on that question, I guess, how do you make sure everyone gets covered? Like the hashkama goer, like, have you found any successful way of segmenting that, the different? Okay, I guess we'll have to leave that as
just trying to understand the question, Roanna. What do you mean in terms of population? Like the age differences, the men and women?
Yeah, what I was thinking of is like young people versus older people. Our programs mostly get like the older people. And I'm going to loosely define older, but it's not the young people, and it probably is that the people who are organizing it are older. So how do you, you know, somebody said something was somebody said earlier that you figure out who your target audience is, but how do you try to cover everybody and not just the same people who always show up because the same people organizing the program?
Right. So I can speak to that a little bit. So it definitely is a challenge. And I think that there's a few things involved. I think it's a matter of who your speaker is and who is at your program, because sometimes you'll have somebody who just is a draw for the younger crowd and the older crowd will come anyway with them. You know, it really depends on the speaker. And a lot of times it depends on the timing of your program. You know, if you're, you know, now we live in a world where most women under a certain age work outside of the home. So a daytime class is not going to work for them the same way something in the evening will. But again, then there's evening conflicts as being a parent. So I think you just have to try to figure out what the needs are. I think, you know, for us, we try to make sure that all of our speakers that come know that they are speaking to a very broad group of women. I tell people, again, I tell them we have a broad age, and I tell them we have women in the room that are single, that are married, that are divorced, that are women, that have been blessed with children, that haven't been blessed with children, that have, you know, kids that have not gotten married, kids that have challenges, all kinds of things. So it really, you know, has to be something for everyone. And at least that's our program. And then, you know, again, things like children's programming and Shalom Bias and all those things we leave to the local shuls. But I think a lot of times it's just a luck of, not luck, obviously you go into the planning, but in terms of who is coming to speak, those people doing the programs usually are the draw for to get the different demographics to come. You'll always have your core base that are going to come no matter who you put in front of them. And then whether it's somebody they loved in seminary or somebody they love just from the community, then that tends to be a draw.
Rowana, can you talk to them and ask them what they want and how to make it happen for them or get one of them on your team? Like just straight up direct communication.
No. I mean, that's the easiest way is to get people involved. I mean, that, you know, that's another question for another broadcast and how to encourage people to get involved, because you have your older people who think they did it already. You have your younger people who say, I'm too busy, but give me programs. And, you know, so yes, that's the answer. You've got to talk to people, but you've got to get people involved. But that, Emma, can be your next your next good suggestion for your next one. But yes, talking to people. But besides talking to people, you know, I like the suggestion about the speaker is going to design it. So talking to people, finding the right program that might interest people, even if they don't want to volunteer, at least they might be interested in coming. So I like that idea.
I think,
and then enabling them to come.
I think also the technical things need to work for different people. So if you want a younger audience, is to make sure that there's a really good children's program and babysitting. Mm-hmm. And again, I from my perspective, is our young professionals who don't live at home during the year are mostly going home to their shuls for Yamim Noraim. So also, if you're going to have any kind of programming for them, it's usually probably not too early. And again, like the youth programs, not too early, like to really think about when people are going to be in shul and what they're going to need, you know, for to make it work for them.